We're blessed to have Jay here with us. Jay, I want to start with a general philosophy. It's a universal philosophy that I have for everything: behavior, money, entrepreneurship. And it stems from the idea that everything grows when the attention and intention flows exponentially. So when we pay attention to something and we give it our intention, doing, saying, thinking, feeling, and believing, everything starts flowing exponentially. And that's true in entrepreneurship. I saw a great quote a day ago. I posted it. It said, you know, if God is making me wait, then maybe I should become a waiter and serve. And I thought that was awesome because it encompasses exponentiality. I was wondering if you could share wisdom and perspective on the exponentiality of entrepreneurship or other things.
Yeah, no, please. Thank you. First of all, I'm sorry I wasn't in the room to hear all about all of you. So I was telling David, my life has been a constant journey and adventure and experiment in exponentiation. And I was introduced to the power of outperforming everyone else by my career. So a quick 3 minutes might be important. I was telling him, and he drove me, that I got started at age 18. I had no education. I got married, had two kids at 20, do not recommend it. And as I had the ability to make the income of nobody. I was making, if I had a job, $200-$300 a month. The only people who would really give me opportunity were entrepreneurs who would let me eat what I killed. And they didn't care if I worked 1 minute or 12 hours. And so I always worked 5 or 6 activities because I had to eat and had 2 kids and a wife. And I had the great privilege of never doing it in the same industry. After about 10, I realized that people in one industry don't have a clue how people in other industries think, act, transact, source business, convert business, monetize business, repurpose business, access, distribution, channels. And I was able to take very basic, common as dirt principles from industries I'd been introduced to, apply them to industries that never seen it, and they exploded. And they thought I was brilliant, but I was really nothing more than an emissary, the one I ran in the land of the blind. When I realized the power that I became for the last many decades on a mission to learn everything I could about every kind of strategy, business model, distribution, channel enhancement, as partnering capability, preeminent ways to exalt your brand. And I realized how much more is possible from time, effort, opportunity, interaction, capital, human capital, IP, all kinds of hidden assets, overlooked opportunities, underperforming performance. I agree with what you're saying, but I would amend it to say, you're right about intention, but when you have knowledge asymmetry, really catapults performance a lot more. Knowledge asymmetry means you understand shit other people don't, and it pre-assumes you know how to apply it. So we were talking, and I said, I've been introducing higher performance for decades, and we're at a late game in my career going to introduce a theorem that I like a lot. It's called exponential entrepreneurship. And the premise is everything you do, every way you do it, everyone you do it with, everywhere you do it, every activity should be done in what I call the exponential zone rather than the incremental, because it's the same time or less, the same action or less, the same access or less, and the same everything or less, except instead of getting X, you get 3X or 5X. And when you do that across many, many different areas, it is exponential. And just to give you one more little perspective, when I started really thinking about exponentiation, I started looking up the mathematical premise. So most people wouldn't know this unless you're a mathematician. I didn't. There are 5 gradients of performance enhancement above exponentiation. I think it's tetration, heptation, pentation, octation. And there's another octation. I don't remember what it is. But it would be these
celebrities.
Yeah, but it'd be like two. It's like Buzz Lightyear to infinity and beyond. And when you learn how much more you can do. So that's how we got, when I was young, that's how we got Entrepreneur to Grow, Entrepreneur Magazine, 900% year in ICI, 21,000% in the newsletters. It wasn't that I was that great. It's just that they were basically content to do what everybody else did the same way everyone else did it. So that's my two cents worth.
That's a good story. Good to see you again.
Yes.
So this is a event is Act Like the Champion You Are. So we all believe that everyone is a champion in one form or another, but not everybody's acting like the champion.
So they're late champions.
Late champions.
I like that.
So you are a champion. I enjoyed talking to you. Last time was in Florida, Miami. What is the characteristic of a champion that helped you in your life at an early age? What was that characteristic, that character trait?
I think the people that I admired and that were most influential were people who had, first of all, humility and humanity. Second, they were willing to invest their opportunity cost, their time in other people with no expected returns. I probably can't even tell you all the people who mentored me directly or indirectly. When I started, I met an entrepreneur who was brilliant, and he let me sit in his office in the corner all day long and watch him do business. I worked all night so I could afford to do that. And after every interaction, every call, he would take the time and explain it to me. You know, what kind of person does that for no expected outcome? And I learned that contribution, it's the most selfish thing you can do is be selfless, because it feels so good. And if your goal is to make people better off every time you interact with them, it's an exhilarating and an intoxicating way to live your life. So I've been impressed by people of high integrity. I was a contributor and also a beneficiary from the late Stephen Covey. His son, Stephen M.R. Covey, talked about Damon John. I've advised him for 15 years and Tony Robbins, but I've been able to absorb through osmosis and nothing else a lot of their attributes. And I also have had the ability to see quality people. And I think quality has nothing to do with making money. The quality people are the ones that really, they're here for a reason. They're contributors. They are investors in the world, and they're paid a much more handsome dividend because they're external focused. But I don't know if that answer is a good one.
That was very nice. And you're nicely dressed today. I like the outfit.
That answer.
So I saw a few things. One, I know one of the common denominators that I found is a desire to be what you must be.
Yeah.
And that's the latency of champion, is that we all have the why inside of us. We have this desire, but I've been around the big celebrities, athletes, and entertainers, world-renowned people like Jay and Tim. And Jay is here because he has a desire that he must be what he can be. He doesn't need the money, doesn't need the attention, but wants to pour in. I do also want to comment on the shadowing, because as a student of Napoleon Hill, who was the first mentee who sat in the shadows of Carnegie, and literally anybody that wants to shadow me, and you know, I'm sure these guys will love it as well, but I have a requirement when people shadow you. It's what I do. Any employee I ever hire has to shadow me or an executive for at least 90 days. So I pay for the shadowing, but here is a requirement. They need to ask questions and they need to give suggestions.
Yeah.
I mean, especially today when you talked about varying industries and applying the capabilities of varying industries, and you look like a genius, because today a lot of the people that shadow me, they have made me more money than my old employees, because they said, hey, did you know there's an app that does that? Right.
Yeah.
Or they've seen something else work in their generation that you have no idea about. So I highly recommend to have people shadow you and ask you questions and give suggestions, and also to shadow others. I still ask to shadow people like Tim and Jay. The fastest way to get to where you want to be is to watch someone that's already there and ask them for directions. So moving on in your career, I'm blessed to have mentors like you that have unbelievable amount of content. But you have missed out on the modern day YouTube, LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, variety of other places that I've been playing in 15 years, just because I missed you by about a decade and was blessed to start this shit and be motivated to do it. What's your biggest challenge knowing that Bob Proctor, Wayne Dyer, Covey, all of the greats that I grew up on, Zig Ziglar, Dennis Waitley, the amount of content these people I just listed out, life-changing content is unbelievable, but you're still here and I don't want your content to go to waste. So what's the biggest challenge you have to not let that content die?
Yeah, so it's a great question. Yeah,
great question.
And probably, arguably, I would say that somebody who would have probably as much content as I do with as much spectrum would be Brian Tracy,
yeah.
But mine is probably less organized but deeper. So, I mean, he sells $49 and I sell 5,000. But I don't really do it. I got burnt out. I was in the seminar business when a lot of you were probably much younger. We did $250 million 3 or 4 years. And I'd stopped for a weird reason. We had 100,000 plus testimonials. Pretty good.
Pretty good.
But I had shared the methodology with millions of people on stage and keynotes. And I was very disappointed that the majority of people wanted to be, I'll call it, spectators up in the stands eating hot dogs and dripping mustard on their stomach. And I didn't want to be intellectual entertainment. So I have defaulted.
I love that term.
Well, thank you. I have defaulted to working privately with companies that I can basically leverage all their critical mass, their velocity, their momentum, their assets, tangible and intangible. But I don't really do a lot of promotion. I am struggling. I'm very good on, and it's not arrogant. I'm good on video.
Yeah.
I've got a show on a network called ASBN, little one, but I've got cutting edge shows that are the most popular. But it's not what I prefer doing. You will never see my cars or my house or my beach house or my dinners with iconic people. I'm a very private person, number one. Number two, I burnt out with selling information, and we sold $25,000 programs, $30,000 programs, because I didn't want to go through all that effort. And at my age, I have a pretty small infrastructure. My whole goal is always to find really interesting businesses or real that are underperforming their potential. And I don't really have a lot of distribution. I was telling, both of you that I literally, I did Tony Robbins. Twinkie and I do a day together. I'm very proud of that because I don't think he does a thing with most people. He lets me lead. And it's all interventions and business remodeling and hot seats and all kinds of really cool things, problem solving, opportunity mining, et cetera. And I pick up a ton of clients there. And I occasionally will do something if I'm invited. But I'm not really that active in self-promotion anymore. But I have been blessed because I've worked with so many industries. I can look at almost any industry just being clinical and fight over performance. So distribution, I don't really do much to try to promote myself anymore. But I love looking at business.
Yeah, I think it's a responsibility of people like Tim and I to preserve, even if we're not promoting, preserve the genius that's been shared and built as well. I know you're part of that. So,
and I'll say one other thing, and it's a heartbreak, is there's so many young people that could benefit from understanding, not just mine, but most of these methodologies, they're universal principles that are everlasting, they're evergreen. And yes, you have to change them maybe in the context of brevity, or you have to connect them to technology. But these are principles that have been driving enormous performance. And human nature really isn't going to change. It hasn't changed since, Adam was on the earth, or we crawled out of the water, whatever we believe in. It won't until we either have Armageddon or nuclear holocaust. In the meantime, all this knowledge that has been so hard won by so many people, I've known a lot of them that recently, I do Bob Proctor, came to my house all the time. And it's wonderful. And a lot of young people have no interest, because they think it's interesting. And this is going to be a little provocative. I've spent a lot of time in Latin America. I've done things all over the world in Asia. And the Asian Latin American cultures, and probably the Italian, they revere vulnerability. They think that wisdom resides in age and experience. Young people here think you're basically an old fart that has no relevance whatsoever. And I get the biggest kick because I'm not popular. I'll go somewhere and they'll go, well, is he still alive?
Right.
Yeah, I think I have a few things. And I understand that maybe you would benefit, but there's a lot of arrogance and that turns into appearance. I don't know if that helped.
I'm also going to coin that intellectual entertainer because it's, you know, as you grow your brand and community, and Tim, brings some of thousands of people, especially on this Aspire tour. And sometimes I'm speaking and I'm thinking afterwards, someone will literally come up to me and say, man, that speech changed my life. And I said, really, what was the takeaway that changed your life? And that's why we start with the idea that you're going to have to tell me a takeaway from today, because I don't want to be intellectual entertainment or fodder, by the way. Anyway,
I love what you just said about the experience. So when you look at the NBA and you look at Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, and Michael Jordan, they played the game at such a level that was masterful. You still have great talent today, but they were so masterful. There's a biblical scripture that says, do you see a person skilled at his work, at her work, they will be ushered into the presence of the great. I personally believe that people are looking for the fast track, almost like the fast pass at Disneyland, and they're missing being masterful. I think you took the time to be masterful. Tell people why that's important.
Well, I mean, it's a difference between flash searing and crock cooking, if you want to be a metaphoric example. So, and again, I'm giving you clinical perspective. It's not trying to be arrogant or conceited. Who was it? Malcolm Gladwell talks about 10,000 hours. I have 185,000 plus hours. Now, it wasn't all fun hours. They were hours invested to take my understanding of those things I was committed to really master to what I'll call, again, infinity and beyond. Most people don't understand. Knowledge is, knowing isn't doing, and doing isn't optimizing, and optimizing isn't maximizing, and maximizing isn't innovating. Most people think optimization and maximization are the same. They're not. One is making it the best, the other is the biggest. But you don't even know how high is high. Every level, when I've learned and really understood exponentiation, every addition you add, that blows it up. So one more piece of the puzzle. And so if I had time, I'll tell you something very interesting. Every one of you, and it's what David just said, but I'll put it in another context. Every one of you, hearing every concept, every response, every perspective, every knee-jerk musing that's coming out of each one of us is interpreting it totally different, because no two of you had the same life. I don't care if it's with your spouse. You weren't raised the same way. Your definition and your mental imagery of words isn't the same. I always, when I used to do the very expensive hot seat programs, would make everybody at every gamble go around the room and share what they interpreted. Now they're going to apply it. And then I'd ask everyone, what did you get out of listening to that? And it was very iterative and fractal. But most people don't really take the time to invest in what I'll call not even optimize. There's so much more that you can get and you can give out of anything. And it's why would you want to do anything half the odds?
I said, I've never met a kid who studies Spanish 15 minutes a day that doesn't get an A. I've seen a ton of kids like you studying 15 hours before the final. And then you'll give me the excuse why you didn't get an A, because you studied 15 hours for the final. Same thing's applicable to what Jay's saying and dissecting it in that way. So you have to be annoying to yourself, honest and repetitive with yourself to be successful.
I like that. I also think that sometimes we're planting seeds that we will not reap the harvest until later in life. Like, there's a lot of things that I planted seeds for 20 years ago, and then they popped up 20 years later, but I wanted it to pop up 2 months later. So,
we're
planting the seeds, and the seeds of discipline, the seeds of education, the seeds of being kind to people.
The infinite seeds, yeah. Next question. Comes here. Thank you, by the way, Dr. Custer.
Thank you. This is great. I'm Justine. You talked about youth and this intellectual spectatorship, and I have two young adults, and sometimes they say to me, who are you going to do? I don't know them. I don't know what they do. You know, show me their documentary or whatever. How do we keep these kids interested without, you know, attraction, not promotion? To you know, we talked about, keeping their attention. I don't know if this is making sense. I hope it is, but that's where I'm a little frustrated because I want to keep encouraging my kids to, you know, take this stuff in.
So I'll give you my knee-jerk, if I understand it. I think you're better advised to help them get external exposures. It's always, it's fascinating. When I would advise companies and somebody inside would tell me privately, I've told them the same thing for years and they don't listen. It's because the person from afar has more impact usually. And parent, kids, I do a lot of things with peer confirmation with people because it has a lot more credibility than management sort of shoving it down your throat. I think it's worth your while to put them into environments with other people if you can afford it. I always admired that when I used to do this expensive seminars, 15, 20, 25 grand, all these doctors would bring their kids and they would follow up 10, 15 years later and they were profound because they have the innate desire. They just don't have anything analyzing that desire, if that makes sense. And you can wish the world for them, but you're their parent. And so they're going to be pushed back and resistance. But if you put them in environments where there's a bunch of people that are all peer confirmed, that they're enjoying it, they're learning from it, they believe it, they see it, and it's explained not too esoteric, but in lay enough terms that it makes sense. But I will tell you something interesting. I had a young man that wonderfully, if we're friends with a senior teacher at our high school, and she asked me to consider taking somebody on as just an intern, and the guy is a football player who's getting money from, he's going to go to Berkeley and make a lot of money because it's big and he's good. And he came to me and he had no idea what he wanted to do. So I gave him a project and I paid him for it. I said, okay, I want to know all the organizations that I can basically contact. I want to be like YPO and this. And I gave him all these things to do. And I said, okay, I'll pay you. You can have up to X hours a week. And I want to see where you are in a week. So a week goes by, he doesn't call. And I finally call him. He goes, oh, I was so busy. And I said, well, show me what you've done. And he was dancing. I think there's a lot of dancing. You're dancing with the stars. I think it's dancing with other people. It's philosophically. And the guy sent me this graph on his computer that just had some names. And he said, oh, I've got it at home. And I'm thinking, well, on his phone. If you've got a phone, you really have access to what's at home there. And then when he finally sent me what was at home, I took him to task and I gave a lecture on integrity and credibility. And I said, why would you call me and say that you haven't had time? Because he was too busy with parties for the sports teams and going to Berkeley. And I said, it's fine, but why would you not respect the relationship to let me know? Status? What if it was just a test? What if that was really important to him? What if I was depending on you, as people will? And I said, I don't care if I ever see you again, but I'm giving you a lesson for the rest of your life. And I'm frankly a little sad your parents didn't teach it. And so I think a lot of people don't know because no one today, younger parents, I think they're so self-consumed that they don't teach character building and they don't teach integrity or they don't teach the depth of meaning behind integrity. And I think that's sad because I don't think most young people, they don't have eye contact. They don't have respect. They're too busy. They can talk to you and they're on their phone. And I think that they're not going to be successful with that in life. And they're going to be very flawed and monodimensional human beings as well. And that's my opinion.
Yeah. There's no lazy kids or lazy parents, and we have to be honest about it. And we talked about shadowing. I have my kids shadow me, and they don't even know they're shadowing me.
Yeah.
And I make them ask me questions and give me suggestions. I don't start by saying, hey, do you have any questions? I go, do you have a suggestion for me? In fact, one question as a parent that I learned changed my life is to have, excuse my language, the balls to ask my own kids, what can I do to be a better dad?
Ooh, I like
that. It's a scary question to ask the first time. And every time I cry, that I get the answer. But at least they know that I really care about being a better dad.
May I ask one? Yeah, so I have a lot of children. I have 7 children from multiple marriages. They're all grown. And I had a parenting attitude that was very bored. I wanted to be loved, but I didn't want to be loved enough that I wanted to subordinate my values. So I insisted my kids had character, that they looked people in the eye, that they were able to respectfully communicate with adults, that we put them into service organizations where they had to go into the inner city and help. We made them, even though they weren't athletic, for 2 years be on the sports team, so they were, even though they were, they didn't, one didn't play, but one play, but they had to learn collaboration, they had to learn patience, they had to learn all these things. I don't think a lot of parents do that anymore.
Yeah. Last question, Bill. And we're going to network. If they work.
I'm not. Jay, now they're most excited about my project now. So it's been and long list or help you.
Yeah. So I'm always looking for interesting businesses that have a lot of assets in play. You know, our sweet spot, it's interesting. A solopreneur, I can help anybody. But if I talk about a relationship that is reciprocal, it's got to be 10 to 150 million. Above that, it's politicalized. And I've told somebody this, and it's embarrassing. About 10 years ago, I was flown out by Berkshire to look at one of their companies. And I was excited. I thought it was my big break. And so I'm sitting looking at this company. It was incredible. And all these moving parts I could leverage. And when I explained my philosophy to them, I got just deer in the headlights. And they were polite, but they dropped me off. They didn't wait for it. They dropped me off at the airport, never heard from them again. And I realized that I'm oil and water to higher cuts. If you're an entrepreneur who's still fundamentally making the decisions and you understand the possibilities, but you don't know how to manifest them, that's the kind of thing I look at. What I'm interested in, I was telling you guys, but we're introducing a thesis we think we will own, and it's exponential entrepreneurship. It's looking at everything you do and never being content except incremental. We call it you're either operating in the incremental zone or the exponential zone, and no, the twain shall not meet. And that excites me. I'm getting involved. I've had tertiary involvement in the automobile industry, and I'm getting aggressively involved in it soon because automobile dealers are really, if you don't understand it, maybe some of you are dealers, it's 6 or 7 businesses in one. It's new sales, used sales, leasing, parts, sort of fixed operations or something else. But they ignore this. They spend money. If you say, I spend money on anything, what you're really saying is I speculate. If you say I invest, that presupposes you know the return you're getting. We look, this is a little J. Abraham shtick, but we look at business like a hedge fund. If you understand a hedge fund, maybe some of your hedge fund people, it is a composite of asset classes that are in it for reasons that have to do with risk and reward. If you don't know the assets you are allocating, activities you are allocating, the money you're allocating, the intellectual capital you're allocating to different things, you might have one area that you're risking 40% and getting a small yield and another one a lot. So you got to know those things. But yeah, I'm looking for always interesting companies to get involved with who can afford me two ways, not just give me a retainer and upside, but will can afford to pay attention and do shit because most people don't. Yeah.
The chair for Jay Abraham.
I'm sorry. Thank you.